RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
TGIF Val and Tracy Beans.
And
oh God, no.
Love you so. 16 candles.
I'm like, play.
Please.
Happy birthday, Frank.
Thanks. Thank you, Tracy.
Yesterday was your birthday.
It was.
And I know, like, we were just talking, you had an amazing show planned for your birthday, 35 years old. You had a little bit of a snafu with the studio, but I couldn't not wish you a happy birthday for the Dark to Light podcast audience, many of whom commented on my birthday tweet yesterday.
I saw it. But I have to be honest. I stayed away from my phone a lot. I did some emergency organization on my computer last night when I got home, because I'm going to have to figure out a way to do my show from home and in an adequate way for the next week or so. And other than that, it really was like a wet blanket on the night. And I tried, you know, Lauren sat with me on the back porch for a little bit, got some air. I had a cigar and I just, it was a real struggle. It was real struggle.
I know.
And let me also just say, it's not because it was my birthday. I'm a 35-year-old man. There's special programming planned that took weeks of tight-lipped production that now has to be pushed back for, I don't know, maybe a week, 2 weeks or more. I don't know. It has to be pushed back. And I lost that great synchronicity of having it be on the birthday as well. So for everybody out there like, oh, why is he so upset? He's 35. He's not 7. It's not about the birthday. But I appreciate so much the wishes.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to say this just for everybody, because I don't think a lot of people realize, and maybe some do. You know, Frank is one of the hardest working show hosts that I've ever met. He meticulously plans his shows. He cares very much about his audience. They're his family. And you work hours and hours and hours on this stuff. And when you have something planned like you had planned for yesterday, I felt this inside my soul for you. I was,
I could hear the cracking of my heart.
Yeah.
When I got to the studio and I turned,
everyone will understand why when the show airs.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll understand in a couple of weeks, but let's move on to happier themes. Cause I'm sure I'll go over this on my at home bunker show later on.
Okay. We'll move on to some other things, but listen, do you hear this? Hold on. Listen. You hear that noise?
That thumping?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that?
I my desk is moving for no reason. I don't understand.
Do you have like a boiler underneath where you're sitting?
I just picked it up from the desk. I don't know what's going on right now. Nothing's touching my desk. I'm looking around to see.
Is there any seismic activity going on in your
area? I don't know. This is really weird, and I'm not going to be able to keep this on this desk.
You know, there's a lot of rumors about deep underground military bases being exploded and flooded lately. Maybe it's the reverberations of some kind of a black op military, some kind of a military black op somewhere destroying a deep underground alien base.
Yes, it's either that or my external hard drive.
Ah, it's just one or the other. Nothing in between.
It was my external hard drive. I don't know. Looked into that. That's not good. I have like 7 of those. I have them. Oh, Lord, the operation I got going on over here.
I got 2.
Yeah, you need them. They're important. All right. So what's going on in the news, Frank?
I don't know. I'll tell you one thing I saw that I can't wait to just talk about a little bit tonight on my own is this governor of Michigan governor of Michigan, who was one of the few handful of governors that wanted to make sure that they said, no, we're not going to look at this hydroxychloroquine stuff. The president is practicing medicine without a license. Well, now that we know that that the idiots who allied themselves with the crazy woman, the murderer in Arizona, are all being outed as knee-jerk TDS sufferers for not wanting to have every option available to their citizens in their respective states. The governor in Michigan is now begging the feds for the Trump-touted coronavirus drug.
Oh, wait, no, that can't be true. That can't be true.
It's not?
It is true.
Yeah. Well, it's not, and of course that she had just banned along with Nevada. Cuomo had said we're not allowing this to have anybody have any access to this in the meantime. So, my big question here is, what is the point of being governor of anything if you ultimately have zero accountability? And when the going gets tough, you can just call daddy and charge it to the credit card. This is not how anything was designed, and it is so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous to even insinuate or suggest to me that the founders had this in mind, where the governors in the states were glorified voting districts that could only handle their own business to a certain degree until they have to call mommy and daddy in Washington. Mm. It's ridiculous. And I can't stand these people.
I can't stand them either. Actually, I don't know. You've met her. Before Frank, Tracy, Politidiva on Twitter, when we were down for the walkaway march, you met her at the Trump Hotel.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Her dad right now he's on Long Island. He had some back surgery and was in the hospital. And he, I guess, ended up catching this. And he is right now on a ventilator in critical condition.
Oh, man.
They just started giving him yesterday the hydroxychloroquine and Zithromax combo. And she just tweeted about 16 hours ago, his pneumonia has not progressed. His organs are fully functioning, which is good news. She didn't say this, but it usually takes around 3 or 4 days for this drug to really start, you know, in serious cases, showing its true power. And I have every confidence that it will in her case. So sending prayers out to Tracy's dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you have back surgery and then you catch this while you're at the hospital. That's what I'm assuming. I don't know that for sure, but there's that. And, you know, it's going back to New York. So he's in New York was my point, is that apparently this is being prescribed outside of those clinical trials that they were banning it. You know, kind of like relegating it to. But something interesting happened the other day. I'm going to play it for you real quick. This clip coming out of the press conference in New York. Where did it go? My goodness. I have this thing that happens every time we do a show. I have this lineup of clips that I want to play. And then I go to the tweets where they are. And the tweets are like the timeline jumps. So I can't find them again. It's horrible, but I have retweeted it myself, so I'm going to look for it. Here it is. It is Governor Cuomo saying that New York is broke.
Why is that? Why on earth is that? Could it be because of the taxes? Could it be because of the burden you put on people who want to start businesses here? Could it be because of the cost of New York City alone and the what you allow people like Bill de Blasio?
Cities, Medicaid?
Yeah, what he lies about. Like when you have Bill de Blasio 2 years ago saying that we're going to create $100 million fund to make sure that over 30,000 illegal immigrants, non-citizens in the city of New York, the five boroughs, are going to be able to have unquestioned, fully covered health care. And then to go on and say that it's not going to be passed on to the taxpayers.
And then to make everybody not build buildings. What was it? He wanted all, like, what would he want the buildings in New York City to be built out of?
I don't know. He wanted to get away from concrete and steel.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. It was like a precursor to all this Green New Deal nonsense. He wanted something about windows. He wanted windows to be five times the size or five times smaller. There's something about the size of windows that he was saying.
Very important too. I mean, you know, you don't want to have a city with buildings made out of anything but feathers. And
well, this is why you elect mayors. Mayors are supposed to be these omnipotent characters that can tell you everything you need to know about administering healthcare to building a building. We elect gods. Don't you understand that in this country, Tracy? We actually elect gods.
I'm sorry. I have been really screwed up lately and I forgot. But here's Cuomo.
So I have them. They are very expensive and the state is broke. So I have no desire to buy more ventilators than we need. Expensive and the state is broke.
He has no desire to buy more ventilators than he needs because somehow, Frank, the state of New York magically knows how many people will be sick and need a ventilator.
Yeah, the state is broke. Well, what does that mean? You've been governor for almost 10 years? How long has he been governor for? I don't even pay attention anymore because there's no hope for anybody else getting in office except lunatics of his stripe. I don't even pay attention to local politics over here in New York anymore because there's just no hope.
You're right. You're right.
I know it's a bad outlook, but I mean, the state of New York is broke. Well, how did that happen? You monkey.
It happened because he's using taxpayer dollars to pierce his nipples.
Oh, yeah. Is that real?
I think it is.
I would believe it.
No, I really think it is. I haven't seen it. I have not seen anyone saying it's fake. I don't know if it's real. I don't know for sure. But it looked pretty real to me. I mean, you never know these days. But, you know, if you wanted to go get your nipples pierced now, you couldn't do it, Frank.
No, it's not cleanly.
Okay. I put a tweet out. We talked about Wednesday where I said, here's a text message exchange from a bunch of from a friend of mine with his wife. And here's a whole bunch of evidence of this viral pneumonia, this weird pneumonia that starts out viral. And then I said, people started emailing the contact on the website. So instead I gave everybody our tip box, which is tips@uncoverdc.com. And oh, Nelly, the stories that I got from people, Frank. I have 300 emails in here of people who wrote in saying, it's 307 of people who wrote in and said, I had an illness back in, you know, early December. Here's what it was. They tested me for flu. I was negative. Now, not all of them are like that. Not all of them say I tested negative for flu, but I'm there's more stuff coming out too. There was a doctor this morning. I was sent a tweet where this doctor, and this came from a friend of mine who I'm not sure if they want to be mentioned, so I'm not going to. It's a doctor. In January, I got very sick, flu-like illness, but much worse. No sleep for 2 days. Almost checked myself into the ER. Had no idea what it was. Today, I checked my antibody status. He got a test, checked his antibody status. IgG plus, meaning he had coronavirus. This is January. What month are we in now? April? And if it started in November, December, January, February, March, that's 5 months, 6 months we're almost into this thing. And five of it was with just wanton disregard because nobody freaking knew about it. And I have hundreds of people that are, yes, granted, it was flu season too. But there are articles and documented research and numbers that are showing the spike in illness. I'm telling you, it's starting to become very, very, very likely that we are in month five of this, not month two.
It's a question I've been asking people. Whether it be guests or just in private conversation, what at this point, and I know that a virus or anything like this that starts off where it you know, it's one person and then it turns to a billion. There obviously has to be a ramp up. There has to be a an increase over time. So, yeah, I understand it goes from a few, turns into a many. It turns into many whenever it spreads around like this. But if we're looking at this going on back in November and you have air travel from both Europe and China, which is pretty much the same thing, especially when you think about how China has colonized Italy. You're looking at unabated travel, people in planes, people in airport terminals, people in subways, in big cities, international air. You're talking about international airports, people that don't even leave the airport. You cough near somebody in an airport and the person next to you goes to San Francisco. So, you know, it's for that to have been going on since November all throughout February until we started closing down international air travel. I always tend to ask myself, where are we really in this process? Precisely. If we're almost 4 months in, when we started tracking it, was it really the start for weeks when we were talking about the death toll is now up to 100? Was it really 100 at that point? And then even when we started, so then I started asking myself two questions. Number one is, then if the only thing that was missing was media coverage, which eventually equates to media hysterics, then what was life like before and what was life like now? And how does the media make an impact in any of that stuff? And once the media hysterics come into it, into the coverage of all this, then how do we start seeing the pressure mount on people to start attributing coronavirus to any death they can give it to?
Yeah.
I.e. that article I brought up from Pennsylvania with you 2 weeks ago about the guy who died pretty much from traumatic head injury of a fall, and they counted it as a coronavirus death. You know, like how many of that is going on?
Everywhere. That's happening everywhere. And listen, it raises a whole bunch of other questions too for me. How is it possible that the federal government didn't know this? Like, we're starting to figure it out. And a lot of people have been bringing something up. What's interesting to me, I don't know that I haven't been able to tangibly really connect the two things, but there's a lot of people talking about, you remember back when all those people were dying of the pneumonia and they had all been vaping?
Yeah.
So now people are starting to say, wait a second. There were a lot of like predominantly male, young, still. Like people are starting to try to tie those two things together. Now, I don't know if that's even possible, but it's interesting. The government freaked out about vaping. Where were those vaping products coming from?
China. Oh, man.
So what did they know and when did they know it? And if we are, in fact, if we peaked and a lot of people had this sickness, and I know like out there right now listening, probably several thousand people are saying to themselves, I was really sick. Then why are we doing this now if it's already festered its way through the population? Why are we continuing to destroy the economy now if it's already festered itself through?
And not only that, but now that you bring up vaping, I haven't heard anything about vaping in what, 2 months more? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember there was one thing that couple of days there was headlines about legislation on the federal level. But other than that, it's once again the media, the eye of Sauron. It's just whatever they put their eye on. That's the focus. That's the focus. And that is the of utmost importance. We talked about nothing almost but vaping in Russia for about a month.
But
Russia,
you remember though, Frank, how the federal government like freaked out and like started to ban vape liquid? And we were all like, what? Why the response like this? This is insane.
Yeah. Maybe because they thought that COVID-19 was, or that this lung, I don't know, whatever that was going on with everybody's respiratory. Damn, what if it was COVID-19 the whole time? When was that? We have to see what the one that flew those flurry of articles.
Hold on.
Because this has been on and off for a while, I have to admit. On and off for
January.
A while. Really?
Yeah, the ban went into effect in February.
Yeah, but like the real, when everybody was talking about what needs to be done, and there was a lot of chatter on, everybody was taking sides on Twitter about what the, whether the president.
September.
So around there. So it does predate a little bit. But yeah. There's overlap. Who knows?
Yeah. But if you start, like, you know, there's all these pieces that are starting to, like, make themselves apparent. We've got these arrests of these people carrying SARS virus and vials in their luggage, not declaring it. We have, you know, all kinds of stuff going on. And it's just too, they're just not telling us something, Frank. They're just not. An infectious disease doctor told Fox News on Wednesday night that using hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin to treat patients that have coronavirus is an absolute game changer. And it is the beginning of the end of this pandemic.
Well, that's good to hear.
So can we go back to work now? You know, I got to be honest. I'm getting so depressed when I say things on my Twitter that are like indiscriminate. Like yesterday I said, Dr. Fauci said that we should keep everybody doing this shelter in place nonsense until there are no new cases identified.
No new cases. No. So everybody has to be cowering in a corner in Maine if someone in San Diego gets it in a couple of months from now.
So I said, there's going to come a time when Americans demand that they return to work and normalcy. And when there are no new cases, it's far too long. So we're going to have to start having serious conversations about that right now. And some of the responses to this are, it's getting really depressing to be on Twitter because some people, they're horrible. You're so divisive.
Stop being selfish. People love saying that. Now, I'm all for rights and stuff, but don't you think a pandemic is a time to think a little bit more seriously? I get a lot of that. Like, ugh. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Well, what the hell are you people?
There's so many. There are two things Americans need to do right now. Stay at home to save lives and for the sake of those who can't, and pray. Demands won't stop the spread. Normalcy can't happen until the spread is stopped.
No. The real sacrifice here is that, you want to see what this really, really should be about. First of all, as you know, I have elderly family members that we all pitch in caring for and taking care of, and a lot of them we find ways of being around them without being around them. That's number one. Number two, so number one pretty much is coming around to the at-risk groups of people in the country need to prioritize themselves and stay home. That's number one. That would be good. It would be a personal, that would be very, very personal responsibility taken there. And it's something that everybody can get behind. It's unbelievable to me to see all this happening, you know, voluntarily avoiding other people, wearing personal protective equipment, self-quarantining, practicing good hygiene. Those are steps to slow down transmission of this virus. And it's good. It's safe. It's responsible. And it's voluntary. But the government forcing people to do any of the above, violating rights, you know, putting more people in danger economically, physically, is vile, you know. And when you come around to thinking about that, well, what do you do? I don't know. Well, how about instead of destroying the entire economy and making it so that many of the jobs people have right now will not exist when they go back into the workforce, how about you split if we're already quarantining, make sure that whoever in the house that is working and is of able body and is not in a high risk group is just separated from mom and the kids for a little bit. If this is really what it is, have dad sleep in the basement for a little while. Yeah, serve him his dinner through a hole in the wall. I don't know. everybody's got to just take it into their own the sphere of influence and see what can be done without mailing it all in. Because no matter how much in a perfect world, if everything could be generated free, energy, everything, where we don't have to worry about anything else. In a perfect world, you can say, all right, you know what the best thing everybody should do? Because epidemiologically, it would be the perfect thing if everyone stayed home.
That was impressive.
It would be the perfect thing if everyone stayed home for 3 to 4 weeks and did not leave the house. But it's not practical because you need food. You need money. What money needs worth. It needs to come from somewhere. Nobody can be supported if nobody is working because government does not produce money. What's going on right now will actually kill. It'll kill more people than the virus will.
Yes. Yes. But what do you think the president's team do all day? Unbelievable. That's another one.
And just to say, it's not that I just recommended a fix to this. I'm just trying to lay out.
Why can't you recommend a fix to it?
Because it comes down to individuals.
Why can't you share a suggestion without having to give yourself a disclaimer?
Because it's not even a real solid recommendation. I'm just trying to describe the situation we're in and what we're really facing instead of saying stay home for the good of people. You're going to save lives. Like, no. Yeah. In a perfect world, everybody's staying home. 330 million people not going to work, staying home is fine if somehow they can come out of that slumber and have everything go back to the way it was. But that's not going to happen. So you have to balance that hopeful thinking, that wishful, magical thinking out with the fact that I don't know that there needs to be a way to mitigate the losses that are going on, because that will kill more people than the virus.
It certainly will. It certainly will. I think that, you know, people are going to have to say, all right, guys, you know what? Enough is enough. Put me in jail if you want. I'm opening my damn business back up. I'm opening my business back up. Sorry.
And the hard part about that is, Tracy, is that whereas there are biological ways that people can attribute death to the virus, there are no ways you can actually a coroner would be able to, you know, a medical examiner would be able to attribute
a heart attack from stress
or economic depression to a death.
Yeah.
You know, that's why all of the death tolls from communist China and the Soviet Union always fluctuate. Everybody has their own calculations. You know, it's the same that economically, that in a totalitarian sense, it trickles down. Lack of resources, rationing, stress, all of it. You know, that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yep.
Or that's where we would be if this goes on for months more.
It can't.
It can't. It cannot do it. We can't.
I mean, I just can't believe some of the responses I'm getting. You guys can go to the tweet and read yourself. You know, there's a good majority of them that are supportive. I didn't say this again. People are like thinking I'm saying this attacking the president. And no, I'm. This is crazy. I'm not muzzling myself. I'm not doing it. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. You might not like me afterwards, but hey, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Well, people, listen, everybody can think about, can have their own opinions, but you know, it's all you're really doing at that point. If you have such a clean idea, if this situation is so easy to decipher for you, then you're turning a blind eye to just as critical conditions, just as critical conditions as the virus that we all want to finally go away, then you're turning a blind eye if this is very, very cut and dried. That's the biggest thing here. It's not so that you're not approving of the president, or you're not supporting the president. You don't want to see him do well, or you don't want to see the country recover. It's just not that simple a situation.
No.
So it can't be black and white.
It's not. I know. But we do, because we're home, Frank, we do get access to some really interesting stuff. One of the things is at a window into UCLA's Black history class during the pandemic. Would you like to hear?
Sure.
In this class.
Here we go.
Reverend Lawson and I believe that the best way to learn about nonviolence is actually through the practice of nonviolence. And so the students in this class will be working on a project to advance the campaign for a sanctuary for undocumented immigrant students and staff here at the UCLA campus. Oh. And this is a critical campaign. This is a critical issue, especially now when immigrant students and immigrant communities are under fierce attack by the current administration, and especially in light of the recent COVID-19 crisis. Immigrant communities, workers, communities of color are feeling the brunt of the economic hardship that we are experiencing currently. Mm,
right. Now, not for nothing, but there's more to this. We're going to finish it. Mm. Thank you, Dilly Show. Brendan Dilly, thank you for the clip. Did he just say that there were undocumented people working at UCLA?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they have very prestigious jobs.
How do they get paid?
This is why leftist professors were very apprehensive about sending their curriculums home digitally, because they knew that more people would see the outrageous commie Bolshevik drivel that is being pushed in American universities.
Let's finish it and then comment. There's more. Hold on.
And so we are going to be calling on all of you to use your creativity and to use your wisdom and to use your thoughtfulness in thinking through how we collectively
This is a Black history class.
A nonviolent campaign for sanctuary here at UCLA using your online resources, your research skills, your communication skills.
You know, once they research, they're going to find something. It's illegal to be here in the country illegally. Wow, there's some research skills for you. And he, do you see how he pins something on the administration that's not even happening right now?
Yep.
And now let me go ahead.
The reason why they pin things or they say things like that is because they're black magicians. And I'm not talking about skin color. Is this guy black?
No, he's Chinese.
Okay. I'm not talking about skin color. I'm talking about black magicians. They are putting into your head that all around you, there is a race war. There is a war against immigrants. Immigrants. There's a war, an unfettered war that is going on. It is an unyielding attack on people that is being spearheaded by the Trump administration. So the next time you walk out of a classroom or walk out of your house and into the real world, you can start looking at that world through a different lens and reinterpreting everything you see as what your very knowledgeable and well certified, academically certified nonsense preacher,
certifiably insane
preacher of a college professor has told you the world is like. That's exactly what it is, because once you rile people up and you talk about this as a fact and you rewrite history for people, they go out into the world and they apply that understanding of history everywhere. Then every time they get shortchanged at a deli, it's because they're black or Chinese. Every time they get looked at weirdly, it's because they're black or Chinese, not because maybe they're being a dick or something like that. Everything. This is why they harp on the things that are going on at the southern border, because the more people believe that there's an attack on immigrants, even though people who break our immigration law are not immigrants, they're squatters and felons. The more people become suspicious and the more people hear about this, there becomes a hard line in the sand, and they actually are able to drum up all that racism that they've been looking for. So they have real evidence to point to eventually. It's why they wanted people to die on the southern border with the caravan stuff in 2018.
they we talked about that a lot on the show, actually, that very thing. And now we're starting to see, as this 9/11 style task force to investigate the president's handling of the coronavirus is rolled out, run by Chuck, by Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi.
Isn't it funny?
We're starting to see them say that President Trump's policies disproportionately affected members of the country who are African American. That now he's racist and he's targeting his assistants in a racist way because he doesn't like black people. And so I'm starting to see the tweets come out now. This guy, Charles M. Blow from the New York Times. My God, I see disaster brewing. It's a map. When average distance traveled first fell between 2 miles or below 2 miles. And you're looking at the south, basically, the southeastern portion of the country, a little bit into Texas, that are traveling further and not staying home. They're trying to say, basically, these people are not listening. But they're also forgetting that the grocery store that I have to go to is more than 2 miles away from my house. Like, things are farther apart. They're not, urban centers are not, you know, whatever. And then they put this next to a graph, distribution of the black population in the United States.
Wow.
And they say, hashtag racial time bomb.
Wow. Wow.
Can you believe it?
Oh, yeah, I can. Yeah, I can, because there's psychopaths. Psychopaths. It's been and the methodology has been beaten into people for a long time. This is psychopathic behavior. It's been going on since before they started dipping into ethnic minority populations in the U.S. to stir things up. You know, at one point they didn't even care about that. A lot of these same types of Bolsheviks that helped put together the 1917 revolution, that were behind the world wars, it's all the same. It really is. President Woodrow Wilson had these kinds of forces driving him. I mean, he was the one that he was the first president to show a motion picture, premiere motion picture at the White House, and it was the KKK movie, Birth of a Nation. So it shows you how, you know, black people were not prioritized for this kind of social were not prioritized as tools of social division at that point. So it's just every once in a while they change up the game plan. They change up the aim. They change up the tools used. And this is where we are, where people are constantly fixated on how they can dip into ethnic minority populations and weaponize them in a media sense to make every step you take like stepping on a landmine.
Oh, Lord.
So if the president keeps people home, or if governors keep people home from work because of coronavirus, it's good. You're saving lives. You keep them home too long. You're destroying people of color and their working opportunities more than others. And something needs to be done. Obviously, they don't want people going back to work. They just want more checks sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's never going to be making sense of it. It is a psychological war more than anything. It's been waged for a long time.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Here's the beginning of his article, the racial time bomb in the COVID-19 crisis. So you ready?
Yeah.
Early Monday morning, the email arrived. The subject line began, alarm at the gate. Someone had died. That's always what that phrasing means. The message came via a group email list I maintained by the fraternity I joined in college some 30 years ago. A younger member, a rising chef in his 30s, had died. As the email read, he passed away due to immune system complications resulting from COVID-19 as a type 1 diabetic. He was in Detroit. This was the third death I've heard about of someone with a connection to my college or a friend who went there. All relatively young, all black men, all diabetics. The two others were in New Orleans, another emerging hotspot. Here we go. I recalled an arresting article I'd read a science-orientated digital magazine in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that I'm on the advisory board of. As the article pointed out, the virus may prove most devastating in the South because of poorer health, curbed healthcare access, and skepticism of government. What the article doesn't state outright, but I read in the subtext, was that the virus is more likely to be deadly to Black people. What?
Uh-oh.
What? What? We may be waiting for a racial time bomb to explode with this disease.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Well, skepticism of government is a good thing, number one. That's a good thing. But here's another reason why I don't understand why anybody gets into all these healthcare debates on such a grand level. We don't care about health in any discernible way in this country.
Nope.
We don't care about health in any discernible way. Care. This guy finished writing his article and then he went off to Arby's and he had a roast beef. We don't care about anything. So what the hell are we even talking about? You say people are diabetic. I know you're born with type 1, but type 2 is usually something that you can stay. I have type 2 all on both sides of my family. But I have been eating pretty well and I have been working out pretty consistently for a couple of decades now. I don't intend to stop. And I'm only trying to bring more supplements into my life to rejuvenate an organic body. And I wish that we were doing more to talk about the things under the sink that need to be thrown away, to talk about all little ways that we can stop giving ourselves more problems. You know, it's just we're not a healthy nation. And that's the other reason why I understand why some people had very dire and still do have some very dire predictions as far as the infection rate in this country. Because whereas we know that if you are older and chronically ill, you're going to be in a high risk pool of people for this particular disease. On top of that, if you go and extrapolate that out to 330 plus million people, mm-hmm. many of whom are older, are morbidly obese,
it doesn't take much to be morbidly obese.
No, I mean, well, obesity, I think for whether you're obesity, percentage of body fats is different for men and women. But either way, if you hit 17% body fat, you're technically overweight, obese.
I am. Let me see. BMI calculator. I'm going to tell you, like, I consider myself, you know, I don't think I'm heavy. I really don't consider myself heavy. I'm 5'3" and I will say I weigh 145 pounds. My BMI. Oh, please enter a number for your height. Centimeters.
How many centimeters tall are you?
I have no idea. Hold on. CDC, here we go. BMI calculator, here we are. Height, 5'3", weight, 145, calculate. I am overweight.
Overweight, most people are.
I'm overweight. Normal would be, if I lost like 5 more pounds, I'd be in normal.
I think it's 17% or so you're overweight. And then I think obesity is actually maybe like 20, 25. I don't know
it's
what the 30. Hell.
It, for 30? Women.
Okay. For women, it's 30. Either way, this is, I mean, you think about where we're at. You think about how unhealthy the lives. We talk about how over-medicated we are on normal years, how we have such problems in healthcare with prescription drugs. We're not living healthy lifestyles. So I understand why some people will look at this virus and who it affects and extrapolate that out to the problems that we know that we have just as a health culture here in the U.S. So for somebody to take all that stuff and to get away from what kind of a scenario we're living in on the regular and start boiling that down to turn this into some kind of a racial attack. It's just goes to show how myopic their view on the world is and how they really are just dedicated to waging a race war,
mm-hmm.
no matter what the issue is.
A race war.
Because if that's not going on, especially now, all of this is about the election year. So we were talking about it before. Just a couple of minutes ago, you brought up Nancy Pelosi and you brought up the select committee that they want to put together now, and Adam Schiff. They want to understand what happened to COVID-19, how they were so woefully unprepared. I wonder what that's going to be all about. OK, so now that they have this very happy accident of this virus that has shown up just as impeachment ends, just as they had nothing that stood between them and certain defeat in November. They had an economy they couldn't take down for nothing, no matter what they tried. Now they have a virus that has kept people at home. The economy's tanking. Millions are looking for unemployment assistance. And then whenever this is behind us, because, of course, Schiff says whenever we recover from this. So that means that we're going to ride this out until there is no more coverage on infection and all that stuff. And once the dust settles from this, Tracy, then they're going to launch an investigation that'll take us into November.
Well, I think that this investigation is more targeted towards after when Trump wins. Because I hope. What's the difference if they don't think he's going to win?
Well, the my whole thing here is their game plan has been look busy.
Well, look you busy.
That's just my whole thing here. It's not only does everything that they do have to have an anti-Trump angle to it, but remember, these are people who have been neck deep in criminality since way before Trump showed up, and all the crimes that they have committed just in trying to get him ousted has been incredible. So they have to keep busy or else they're exposed. I've always been saying that. So it doesn't matter if this is going to prevent him from, if this is going to be a last minute measure before the election or something that they could be doing in the months that follow the election. It's just they have to keep busy so that anything that comes their way looks like political persecution.
Mm. So they I can't believe how crafty. Four years.
They've crafty. Been able
to, yeah. Well, sloppy, but crafty. They are actually able to do it. They were able to suck up 4 years.
Hell yeah.
Gross. I had something else here too. A little off topic, and then we'll get back to, and then we'll end for the Friday, because you have done a great job today, Frank, with the show.
How so?
You've been very knowledgeable and witty and smart, and I've done a lot of listening today, and I've enjoyed it.
Well, I didn't do any talking last night, so I'm pent up.
Yeah, that's true. I need to get you a couch. There is a I don't know, this came out last week, but we've got some more stuff on it today. The person who was the chief investigator for the Seth Rich investigation, oops. Hold on. I closed it. They moved the reopen close tab function from Google. Like, you know how you used to be able to reopen the close tab if you just right clicked on a tab? They removed it. It's now all the way on the side. Anyway, April 3rd, this was published, but it's an update. The lead investigator from the Seth Rich investigation did a video deposition under oath with Ty Clevenger in the Ed Bitowski lawsuit. And they have provided the entire deposition transcript. I haven't read it yet, but in the article, they talk about how this U.S. attorney admits that the FBI did examine his computer and she did meet with an FBI agent and prosecutor from the Mueller investigation, that it should have been in a 302, but they are saying there is no 302 in existence.
Oh. No 302 exists.
No, but the FBI has been saying to this attorney, we have nothing that represents that we have anything about the Seth Rich investigation in our files at all. And they've been using a very obscure sort of excuse to push back at this FOIA and this demand in this lawsuit. And they're basically saying it's nothing of investigative significance. Well, what does that mean and to who? You know, to you, that might not mean the same thing as to people who actually give a crap about the truth. So the fight rages on. And if you guys want to keep up with some more Spygate-ish stuff, I've been starting to read a lot more from Judicial Watch. They're super busy right now. Super busy. One last thing before we go. In the Michael Flynn case, we've got a little bit of interesting stuff going on as well. I'm going to just pull it up really quickly. There was just a recent ruling on a few orders in the case. The judge ordered on the government's motion for waiver of attorney-client privilege. In other words, the government wrote a petition to ask the court if they could allow or force a waiver of attorney-client privilege so that they could investigate what Covington's responsibility was in telling General Flynn to plead guilty and not giving them the evidence that they were supposed to give them. So, like, if Covington held back information from General Flynn about what the exculpatory evidence was at the time, then that's on Covington, and it makes more sense for the judge to allow Flynn to withdraw his plea. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So the government wrote in asking for a waiver of attorney-client privilege so that they could look through all of the communication between Covington and Flynn. And the judge ruled on it as moot, meaning it doesn't matter either way, so it's not happening. And then the same thing on the disclosure of information within that order as moot, which is interesting and can mean like any number of four or five things. It could mean that they're going to accept his plea withdrawal.
Let's hope.
It could mean that the defense is or the prosecution is going to drop the case. And he knows something about it, so he's placing that order. It could mean that they're going to go to trial. They're not going to accept the plea withdrawal, so it's moot and it doesn't matter either way. Or it could mean there was one other thing, and I don't remember what it was. I asked Technofog to give me a couple of. Maybe I can find it in here. He responded to me because I ask him questions sometimes. He says, one, judge rejects or accepts ineffective assistance of counsel motion and vacates the plea. Two, he rejects or accepts the motion to withdraw based on government misconduct, which would take away the need for them to prove anything with the law firm. Three, judge accepts or rejects Flynn's withdrawal of plea. Four, DOJ drops charges. Probably one, two, and four, unlikely. It's likely three. He's trying to decide on what he's going to do about the plea deal. So that's it. That's that. And one more thing that I wanted to tell everyone about. I'm going to put a link to this in the description box below or in the show notes. There is an amazing 45-minute long video that I was sent by Scott McDonald, the whistleblower on records that we talked about, several months ago. He sent me a video. New York City frontline doctor from the ICU at Cornell Medical Center explains how easy it is not to get infected and stop the spread of COVID-19. This is a group call that was recorded somehow and put out on YouTube of this ICU doctor as recently as last week explaining how people can get back to normal and protect themselves and how much they've learned about this virus and how it spreads and how easy it is to catch and who's most vulnerable, et cetera, so on and so forth. It is 45 minutes of your time. I think you will find very well spent if you listen to it. And I think that if we had this sort of a thing on television, we would be in a completely different world right now.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
No.
Mm-mm. That's not allowed. Being told one thing one day, shouted down the next, changing your stance. Then being told the change in stance is confusing and and then it comes back around and oh God. Well, I don't know why anybody watches television anymore.
Frank?
Yeah. Happy birthday. No. Happy birthday,
baby. No. I'll just play this part now.
Fine. 16. Ah. Yeah. We need to. I wish we played more music. I really do. I know that it's a no-no, but I've always been a rebel when it comes to playing music when I'm not supposed to.
I know. And you know what? I have used your playlist on numerous occasions.
I still build it. It's
I know I you
moved,
do.
I moved it all to Spotify.
Oh, did you?
I moved it all to Spotify. So there's just a lot more on there.
When did you do that? I just looked at it not even 2 weeks ago.
Well, I mean, the one, the live music playlist that I have on my YouTube channel is still there. It's still there. But the thing is that YouTube, it's, they systematically, they're always removing uploads. So I wanted to preserve all these tracks so that I didn't lose, you know, I didn't forget about songs I love for a long time. And I, with some help, I created a public Spotify playlist, and I added that to my on-demand section on my website.
Well, that's good to know. I'm going to go over there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right on the
on-demand. What is your website?
It's quitefrankly.tv.
There you go.
I just bought the .tv recently, and so it's a lot easier. It rolls off the tongue better than quitefranklypodcast.com.
Sort of, but everybody knows you that either one will work, and you have a redirect, I'm sure, right?
Yes, they both. Yeah, they both will work, but I'm just going to prioritize .tv, especially that especially since we're starting to focus on network format soon. So,
I like that.
Yeah,
good things to come. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
DGIF Val and
Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Monday.
Later.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the craziest time in our lives that we've ever seen. Guess who I've got on the show this week? We're talking to my financial buddy, my financial guru. We're talking to Sean McGovern about what the hell we're going to do in the restaurants.
Business is so hard. All the things that we just talked about, you know, the office market changing, you know, having to change business models and businesses having to constantly change and adapt. How the hell can small business continue to change and adapt, right? Because most small businesses, the number one reason why they fail is they're undercapitalized, right?
Right.
They don't have enough money going in. And it's really hard for small business, right? If you're not very well capitalized, you don't have a big money partner, or, you know, you don't have enough reserves, which most of these small businesses, especially restaurants are living month to month, you know,
week to week, just to stay open. Man. Super tight.
Week to week. I mean, so it's, you know, back to my previous comment, thinking differently about capitalizing your business. Do you take on more equity? Like, I don't know. Like, you really got to think if you ever wanted to get into business, you know, you've really got to be overcapitalized, you know, to protect 100%. Against a downturn, or else you're just going to be incredibly stressed out.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.